This strategy and business podcast was produced in conjunction with Knowledge at Wharton. Money isn't the key to successful innovation. In fact, many companies spend far less than their competitors on R&D to achieve far better performance. To learn why that's the case, Strategy in Business and Knowledge at Wharton spoke with Kevin Dayhoff, a partner at Booz & Company, and Carl Ulrich, Wharton Professor of Operations and Information Management. In this first part of a three-part series, Dayhoff and Ulrich discuss the relationship between spending on innovation and corporate performance, how projects are valued in a portfolio, and the importance of screening opportunities.
Kevin, talk about the connection between the amount of money companies spend on innovation and their financial performance.
Yeah, we've spent some of the relationships between corporate spending and performance over the last 3 years as part of our Innovation 1000 study. And probably the most fundamental finding or fundamental conclusion that we came to is that we just could not find a direct relationship between spending and performance. And so what that really meant was this notion that by spending more, we can assure ourselves of a higher level of performance was something that we just didn't find. And that had ramifications for a lot of the companies that we work with in terms of our consulting services. What we did find is that it's much more important about where you place your bets in terms of new products and technology and how effectively and how efficiently you manage the R&D function itself. And so the companies that really stood out in the studies that we've done have been those that have been really focused on building capabilities across the entire innovation value stream. So capabilities in areas like ideation, in portfolio management, in product development, and in commercialization. It was much more about the capabilities that a company has and how efficiently and effectively they manage the R&D process as opposed to how much they spend.
Let me add a couple things to that. I've looked at the Booz Allen study, and it's fascinating. And just to give a real specific example, Apple Computer, if you were to look in the computer industry, is at the top or near the top in revenue growth and profit growth. And they're in about the middle in R&D spending. So that's an example of a firm that is managing to get a lot out of its R&D efforts without spending very much money relative to the industry as a whole. If you think about why that might be, one of the reasons is that it manages to find a set of very rich opportunities to make investments in. And if you think about taking a given set of opportunities that you have as a firm and just spending more money, you're likely to not have a very good return because you'll be spending on opportunities that are marginal, that aren't so good. And so part of what I would add to what to Kevin's explanation for the phenomenon is that generating more and better opportunities is a way to increase financial performance without necessarily increasing the amount you spend.
And this is a real issue that corporate executives really struggle with. I mean, in some cases, it's a bit of a black box, right? They want, you know, they're under pressure to grow the business, to increase profitability, to improve return on investments, but they're really unsure as, you know, should I be spending more? Should I be spending less? There's internal advocacy groups. And so, you know, the natural inclination is that more is better. And at some point, there are diminishing returns. I mean, you really want to have a process to really focus on those projects where you're going to get the highest returns. And that's why it's so important to have the processes and capabilities which enable you to do that.
With R&D spending accelerating, what would you advise companies to do? I mean, if my competitors are spending more, I might feel compelled to keep up, for instance.
Yeah, what we found, again, in our most recent study with Innovation 1000 was a focus on two things. One is just how important it is to ensure that your business strategy is aligned with the innovation model, and that is that you're able to understand where the value is in terms of sources of innovation in the industry in which you're competing, and that's aligned in a way that you can ensure that you can capture that value. The second thing is also pretty fundamental. It's around the connection with the customer. What we found that those companies that have direct interactions, direct connections with their customers, are engaged with customers throughout the entire innovation process, throughout the entire product development process, we actually found had higher rates of performance. And the importance of that interaction with customers is one of the things that really stands out in terms of where to focus.
Let me add something on that as well, which is I think the way that question is framed might not even be the right way to think about it, which is I think best practice would be to look at investment opportunities in innovation alongside other kinds of investment opportunities you would have in the firm. And calling it R&D spending or tracking R&D spending, I think is probably the wrong way to think about it. You want to say, I have this project, we can call it an innovation project, but I have this project where I need to invest $15 million, but I think it's going to give me a 5x return. That project ought to be looked at alongside maybe a plant and equipment proposal that would have a similar kind of return. The only time you run into difficulty in thinking about it that way is when you're looking at really what I might call the far horizon opportunities that are sometimes very hard to analyze in financial terms. And then it might make sense to have a bucket or a budget for the whole portfolio of far horizon opportunities and to look at budgeting how much you invest in that category of activity.
I think that's a really good point because we also found it's not just about the R&D investment itself. In fact, we found that these are inherently cross-functional kinds of things. And so while the investment in R&D or an investment in technology is important, you need to think about it in the context also of the fact that what's going to make or break these things is the marketing and the commercialization of that product and those sorts of things as well. And so you really do need to think about it holistically. And if you just think about it in the context of R&D, well, yeah, we can design a better mousetrap, but there's no guarantee that that's going to be successful because if we don't think about it in the context of the cross-functional interactions and what it really takes to successfully commercialize a new product or a new innovation.
So how do you value these projects in a portfolio?
Well, let's take the simplest way you could do it. The simplest way to value projects in a portfolio is just to add them up. So if you have 10 projects and you can do a financial analysis on each one, and in business school, we would teach you to do a net present value, some kind of financial valuation of those projects. The simplest thing you could do is just add them up. And that's worth doing, but it fails in two basic ways when you do that. One is that there are certain kinds of projects that have, and I'll use an academic term, have a sub-additive payoff. It means they don't strictly add up. A good example of that would be if you are Merck and you're developing a new drug for diabetes, you might have two molecular compounds that both target the same biological mechanism. And you really wouldn't want to add up the value of those two separate projects because you aren't going to launch two diabetes drugs. So you really have to look at those two projects together and say, what's the value we expect from pursuing these two projects together in terms of how likely we are to get a product to the market? So that's one failure in the approach of just adding up the projects in a portfolio. The other failure you get is that, coming back to this idea of far horizon opportunities, you aren't going to be able to do the analysis for certain kinds of projects, projects that are very exploratory in nature. And even if you were to do the analysis, what you'd really have to do is think of that project in terms of an option on the future, an option for future possibilities. And that's not usually something you can do, analyze formally. And so it tends to have to be a more qualitative assessment of what kinds of opportunities would this project provide for us in the future, not strictly what's the present value of that project.
I'd be interested in your thoughts. Another sort of failure mode is we've found is that for many of our clients, this whole notion of the business case is often static as opposed to dynamic. And that leads to a phenomenon we call ballistic R&D, where once a project gets in the pipeline, it is going to just be forced through the pipeline, as opposed to recognizing that, particularly for some of the longer cycle development efforts, there are cases where you need to think about it in the context of an option. And most certainly, you need to think about it in the context of, you know, has something fundamentally changed as we've gotten into the development of this in terms of a technological discontinuity or some significant changes in the market that would force us to come back and revisit the business case associated with this and think about it in the context of the option value of continuing. The result of not doing that is that oftentimes you get these development projects that, you know, they work their way through this innovation pipeline, but we find that they've really ultimately missed the mark because the mark has moved in the context of the, you know, 2-3-4 year development cycle that it takes to develop the product itself.
You know, it's interesting. I think there's another lesson from the pharmaceutical industry here, which is most projects in the pharmaceutical industry are killed. And so what's developed in the pharmaceutical industry is a fairly healthy attitude, which is killing a project early with the best information is a way to add value to the portfolio as a whole. And yet that logic often, as Kevin suggested, often hasn't made its way into consumer packaged goods or industrial products, where once that money's been approved and the project team's been put together, you want to do everything you can to keep it alive. It's exactly the opposite logic.
In many companies in the industries that I work in, it is the hardest thing in the world to kill a project. Mm-hmm.
And yet that's a way to add a lot of value. Yeah. If you've killed something that ultimately you're just going to pour more resources in without getting anything out.
Yeah, are there other elements of innovation that you can isolate that do affect financial performance?
There are, if I were to add a couple more, returning back to a theme I started off with is the quality of the opportunities you put into the pipeline in the first place is a pretty good lever for increasing financial performance. Often, I think we don't invest enough in generating a rich array of alternatives from which to choose early on. And it's very hard to take a weak opportunity and turn it into a highly profitable innovation. And so I see firms probably not investing quite enough on the front end to identify rich opportunities. And then if you identify those rich opportunities, then a way to make sure you maximize financial value is to be efficient in the way you screen and filter and evaluate them, as we were just saying, so that you make sure to kill the ones that really have no chance of creating tremendous value.
I think I completely agree with that. I think the front end is just so important because ideas are cheap. And if you are able to keep the funnel pretty wide at the front end and you have these, you know, rigorous screening processes that you use in terms of portfolio selection and portfolio management, then, you know, that can have a big impact in terms of the overall performance of the portfolio. I would also say that another thing we've observed is a lot of the stage gate type processes that have been put in place recently are in some ways biased to sort of avoid the unsuccessful project, and that some of the selection criteria is geared towards that. One of the things that we've seen that in some cases that goes too far, and it's the type 2 errors that we worry that some of these stage gate processes are starting to kill things before we really know what the value of the project is or the new product is going to be as it comes out the other end.
Thank you for listening to part one of our series on innovation. In the next segment, Dayhoff and Ulrich will discuss collaborative innovation in a global context. For more insights about management, innovation, public policy, strategy, and more, visit Strategy and Business at strategy-business.com. For more business research and analysis from Knowledge at Wharton, visit knowledge.wharton.upenn.edu.